The Gary Knoll Show, weekdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
I'm going to bypass the health and nutrition. I'm going directly to our issue of the day, and then I'm going to open up our lines for you to call in and share your points of view. I commend those of you who have been steady and fast at supporting the rights and privileges of individuals to share freedom of speech in our society, which is now virtually challenged by this latest abhorrent, perverse act by Congress, almost all of Congress, with few exceptions, in allowing the President of the United States to have the unchallengeable power to arrest anyone for any reason they deem and keep them in permanent state of isolation. So we're going to propagandizing for perpetual war. We're going to some of our other issues that are important. I'm going to bypass our guest today. We're not going to talk about zombie banks with Yaman Unaren. We will do that on another day. Now, after I give my commentary, please call in at 888-874-4888 for your points of view. One of the curiosities of being chronically ahead of the mainstream is that periodically you suddenly discover that you're not. For example, over the past decade, I've been putting forth the notion, seemingly bizarre to many, that the first American Republic was over and that we had moved into a post-constitutional adhocracy. Lately, however, the idea seems to be becoming increasingly mundane, almost like saying, geez, that was a lot of rain we had. But when did it shift from being a radical thought to becoming so inevitable? I don't remember people debating it on corporate TV, writing about it in the New York Times, arguing it in a campaign speech, or analyzing it in a professional paper. It just happened. The most important development in our nation's history since the Civil War crept into the room like a shy new guest. And somewhere in between, radical conjecture transformed itself into normal. We have moved into a time in which the Bill of Rights is being routinely trashed. The true unemployment rate is higher than anything we've seen since the Great Depression. Our corporations are out of control. No one in power seems to care about the climate change, and only the presidential candidate in neither major party who won't send you to Gitmo without an indictment and trial is Ron Paul. What's critical about this is not just that the new reality has been recognized, but that it has become acceptable as inevitable, without debate, without anger, and strong protest. Some years ago, I wrote about such a time. What was unexpected, both in timing and intensity, was that I would not only live through one of America's great revivals, but during a subsequent era when my country, without debate, consideration, or struggle, decided it really didn't want to be America anymore. Few even talked about it, but as a writer and a child of segregation, I knew that in the silence could be something as telling and evil as words. After all, the language of the Old South was most descriptive in what it didn't say and what wasn't allowed to be said. Much later, I would come across the words of a German university professor who described to journalist Milton Mayer what it had been like under the Nazis in the 1930s. To live in the process is absolutely not to notice it. Please try to believe me, unless one has a much greater degree of political awareness and acuity than most of us ever had occasion to develop, each step was so small, so inconsequential, so well explained, on occasion even regretted. Believe me, this is true. Each act, each occasion is worse than the last, but only a little worse. You wait for the next and the next and the next. You wait for one shocking occasion, thinking that others, when such a shock comes, will join you in resisting somehow, but it doesn't happen. Suddenly it all comes down, all at once. You see what you are, what you have done, or more accurately, what you haven't done. And for that, that always required of most of us that we did nothing. You remember those early meetings of your department in the university when, if one had stood, others would have stood, perhaps, but no one stood. A small matter, a matter of hiring this man or that, and you hired this one rather than that one. You remember everything now, and your heart breaks because it's too late. You are compromised beyond repair. William Schreier noted similar things in Nightmare Years. Quote, "What surprised me at first was that most Germans, so far as I could see, did not seem to mind that their personal freedom had been taken away, that so much of their splendid culture was being destroyed and replaced with a mindless barbarism, or that their life and work were becoming regimented to a degree never before experienced, even by a people accustomed to generations, four generations, to a great deal of regimentation. Are we too late this time as well? One can't tell, but the only way to fairly test the matter is to, in the silence, loudly describe America as it has truly become, not yet a dictatorship, but certainly a land run by those in major parties whose contempt for our Constitution and normal decency strips them of any pretense of democratic leadership, leaving but the greed, corruption, and cynicism of those who honor power and little else. What is needed at this moment is for a far more visible community of those who know this, tell about it, dislike it, and are willing to fight to recover our land from it. We have to put the issue out where even the Prozac press can't ignore it. Much of the occupiers have done on economic matters. Basically, our country is now divided between those who still believe in democracy and those who believe only in a culture of impunity to those with power and devoid of honor. With stunningly few exceptions, the latter includes not only Republican and Democratic politicians, but our business leaders, media figures, and a surprising number of academics. One need only to compare the role of today's intellectuals with those of the 1960s to see how far our purported best and brightest have also fallen. To do so is to do something about this. We do not have to forego our concerns for economic, ecological, and social issues, but we must understand and act on the fact that the biggest division in our country today is between those who still believe in democracy and decency and liberty and those who consider America just one big hedge fund that no one can or cares to regulate. It might help, for example, if Greens and Libertarians came together with a joint plan to confront this crisis, or if Bernie Sanders and Ron Paul jointly formed a movement to give it life, or if the occupiers and the Tea Party took a tip from the members of Memphis and Richmond, and despite all their other profound disagreements, worked together on the simple recovery of a constitutional society. As Tea Party member and Marine Corporal Stephen Mark Allen put it, nothing would terrify the establishment more than a unified Occupy Tea Party movement. But one thing is for certain, time is running out. When you have a Democratic president supporting military incarceration without any constitutional protection, you don't have that many friends left. This is not just a difference in ideology, it is two Americas. And you may not even get a next time in which to know better how it should have been. That's our issue. I'd like for you to call in and share your points of view. While you're doing that, I'm going to go to several other, as I promised earlier in the program, several other shorter commentaries that all interlock and all tie together. First up, The Indian Land Grab in Africa by GOI Monitor. Joining the neo-colonial bandwagon, Indian companies are taking over agricultural land in African nations and exporting produced food at the cost of locals. Indian companies venturing abroad is always regarded as a healthy trend, as an indicator of India's newfound economic status, but little is known about how those companies are flexing their imperialistic muscles in poorer countries, grabbing the land, giving it nothing in return. A report, India's role in the new global farming grab by researcher Rick Rowan brings forth these atrocities, which are shockingly similar to what India used to blame rich Western countries for. Joining the race with China, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, South Korea, and the European Union, India and Indian-owned companies are acquiring land in Africa at throwaway prices, indulging in environmental damage, and exporting the food while locals continue to starve to death. The origin of this unhealthy practice can be tracked back to the food crisis in 2008, when rich countries were forced to confront the reality of how fragile the global food scenario could be, especially for those without sufficient cultivatable land. To ensure more direct control over food, these countries started acquiring land in poor African countries and shipping the produce back home. A recent World Bank report found that 45 million hectares of large-scale farmland deals have been announced between 2008 and 2009. By the way, 45 million hectares is an enormous amount of land. But what happened to the people who were living on those land? What happened to the multiple tribes that had lived there and, even though poor, still had farmland? They have all been forced off. They now have no food. They have no land. What had been in their domain for hundreds of years is gone, all because of India and other countries buying the land from corrupt leaders of those countries and then using it for themselves. And then I have a chart of how, for example, the Cartoonery Agro Product Company of India in Ethiopia acquired 100,000 hectares in different regions to grow palm, cereal, and pulses, which are legumes. And then I have 20 companies, all from India, growing and buying huge amounts of land in Uganda, in Brazil, Ethiopia, Kenya, Tanzania, Argentina, Indonesia, Malaysia, Ethiopia, Rwanda, and then taking over enormous amounts of land and forcing the peasants off. So, what do we have? We have a media that has not touched on this topic. Politicians terrified to mention it. Virtually invisible. Oh, except if you're with one of the 1.2 billion people who are now going to be starving to death. From Mike Lofren, Propaganding for Perpetual War. Are our rulers stupid, or do they think we are stupid? According to the Congressional Research Service, the United States has appropriated $800 billion for the direct cost of invading and occupying Iraq, including debt service since 2003. That sums rise to approximately $1 trillion. The White House estimates the number of U.S. military wounded at 30,000, but it's the dead are at 4,484, and over 100,000 minimally Iraqi men, women, and children civilians were killed. There are 2 million internally displaced Iraqis in the country of 30 million, as the United States Armed Forces, all but 17,000 State Department, private contractors, mercenaries leave the country. Iraq is plunged into sectarian and ethnical-fueled political crisis. In view of this crippling cost of human and financial as well as strategic and moral disaster the invasion of Iraq precipitated, what sort of verdict do you think our leaders representing a presidential administration ostensibly opposed to the invasion and promising hope and change bother to offer us? From Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta, quote, "As difficult as the Iraq War was, I think the price has been worth it to establish a stable government in a very important region of the world," unquote. One's only reaction to this statement is to blink in disbelief and wonder. Is Panetta that stupid, or does he think that we, the supposedly self-governed citizens of this country, are that stupid? The kindest thing one can conclude is that this is some sort of throwaway line intended to provide solace to the families of those killed or consolation to survivors who were maimed. But that is pretty thin gruel. One imagines those people and their kin have formed their own opinions about what happened and do not require a patronizing justification. And in any case, if it was worth it, why shouldn't we keep doing it? Not only in Iraq, but all over the world. Perpetual war for stable government. Isn't that what they want? Another explanation that comes to mind is the propaganda aspect of it. some government hacks really do believe that if you repeat something over and over, no matter how threadbare or false, a large number of people will believe it. Republicans have used this technique for years, and Democrats are up and on this, equaling Republicans in mastering it. It seems to be at least a partial success tactic. After all, the bloodshed and the waste, the plurality of 48% of Americans still believe invading Iraq was the right decision, according to Pew Research. In one of his wartime essays, George Orwell remarked on some of the patently ridiculous claims of totalitarian propaganda. In his view, the point wasn't whether it was believable or not. In fact, the more ridiculous, the better. The point was that government functionaries got to make the statement knowing full well it was ludicrous. News organization dutifully printed it as if it were fact, and the public sphere was blanketed with the absurd propagandist's claim. As Orwell said about the goose-step march of totalitarian armies, yes, it looks ridiculous, but do not dare laugh. That is the underrated objective of false government claims. Even when they do not convince, they demoralize, and Panetta's statement will receive respectful coverage in the mainstream media, and there will be David Gregory, and Bob Schaefer will not argue with him on the Sunday morning talk show beyond, at most, a very polite demurral. For all intents and purposes, he will get away with it. And no ordinary citizen will ever be in a position to get in his face and tell him he's shilling for destructive policies that are bankrupting us. Because that's how democracy and truth work in the United States these days. End of quote. Mike Loughran, retired after 28 years as a congressional staffer, 16 years as a professional staff member of the Republican staff of the House and Senate Budget Committee. Now, next, The Corporations That Occupy Congress by David Clay Johnson. And here's what it says. Some of the biggest companies in the United States have been firing workers and in some cases lobbying for rules that depress wages at the very time that jobs are needed, pay low, and the federal budget suffers from a lack of revenue. Last month, Citizens for Tax Justice, an affiliate, used corporate taxpayer and corporate tax dodgers statistics. Here are the big corporations. Top of the list, General Electric. And giving over $80 million in lobbying and in the last year. But what did it get in return? It got refunds of $58 million. Then it was PG&E, then Verizon, Boeing, FedEx, Honeywell, Duke Energy, DuPont, and Wells Fargo. And they gave enormous amounts of money to politicians, but they got an enormous amount in return. So these are the people who bought Congress. So, and finally, on this issue, what is happening is that major box stores like Walmart are not just hiring directly, rather they're hiring through temporary agencies, because they found that when you hire someone through a temporary agency, you do not have to consider them full-time, therefore they do not have to get the health insurance, they're not covered and protected under any of the other worker laws. And that's where the big jobs are now coming, but they're very low-paying jobs, and the workers have virtually no rights. And how did they get this way? It was simple. ALEC, meeting with state legislators and federal legislators, made sure that these laws were implemented. And last up, a few years ago, I said that we should outlaw 100% trading in derivatives and any form of product or service that impacts directly the quality of life. For example, allow no one to trade in water, oil, food, land, or currencies. And yet nothing was done. But here is the latest from The Guardian. The speculative driving up food prices. Quote, last year the price of global food floated high as ever. That's bad news for most of us, but not for those who trade commodities. In fact, 2011 was a great year for commodity traders, who thrive on bad news, currency woes, drought, flood, freeze, fire, and all other manifestations of imminent apocalypse. They rode the wave. So then they showed about the percentages of food prices going up, but it had nothing to do with supply and demand. It had to do with how they had the power of using enormous amounts of debt to influence the price of oil, the price of water, the price of anything. All the while, members of Congress, knowing full well that this was the largest amount of money being made in America through the financial sector, chose not to regulate them at all. Every effort to reestablish the Glass-Steagall Act, to reestablish the rules that would have helped protect the American public, were kept at bay so that the so-called free market could prevail. That's unfortunate because we all pay a price for that. Those are some of the issues we must face. Like it or not, we are now at a place where virtually any rule, any law that benefits a major corporation, the political entities behind it, those who seek power, absolute power to use as they wish, now have our government, the left and the right, in their pocket. There are a few exceptions. There are a handful like Ron Paul or Bernie Sanders and Dennis Kucinich who will fight back, but it's less than 2%. As a result, we do not have a true democracy. We do not have a true republic. We do not have true freedom of the press. We do not have true right of freedom of assembly. If we would have those, then we wouldn't see the military overreacting and brutalizing the occupying forces. We wouldn't have our phones tapped, and we wouldn't be singled out for standing up and speaking out on issues. We wouldn't be on an enemies list, a terrorist list, for doing nothing more than wanting to see a cleaner and healthier environment or see someone protected from bad foods or bad drugs. And yet that is the way it is today. If you pull back far enough, you see a scenario that is so disturbing that can overwhelm one's senses and create apathy and simply resolving that it's just too big. But it's not too big. We have the power to say no. We have the power to work with people that on issues that we can agree upon can help us go forward, even if there are other issues we can say we disagree upon. We have not yet gotten to that point because egos, ramrod, rigid ideology stand in the way of cooperating. As a result, you have 1,000 different issues, none going forward because people will not surrender their issue and their moment and their right to cooperate with other people. As a result, those in power see this. The institutions they control and the way that they manifest the police forces to virtually militarize everything. We see it with the FDA wanting to take our right to use supplements. We see it with the USDA wanting to eliminate all small organic farmers so you can only eat genetically engineered food. You see it with a bill that you're probably not even aware of that was, in fact, it's a very important bill, and we can thank Ron Paul for this bill, H.R. 2769. Why? Because the members of the pharmaceutical industry, working with different members of the media, wanted to make it a law in 2003 through the new Freedom Commission on Mental Health that George Bush was behind, that all 52 million American school children be screened for mental illness, claiming without a shred of scientific evidence that early detection, assessment, and links with treatment could prevent mental health problems from worsening. And who was one of the major advocates of that? Hillary Clinton. These screenings came under fire. And who came to the challenge to say no? Ron Paul, wanting to help protect the parental consent. So he created the Parental Consent Act, which protects families from mandatory mental health screenings that can be used to diagnose mental health issues against parental wishes. And 99% of those mental health issues don't exist. These are just normal emotions of being a child, but have been pathologized by the corrupt Surgeon General, the U.S. Public Health Service, the National Institute of Mental Health, all of which are under the thumb of Big Pharma. So at least we have someone doing something but the American public is not made aware of it because they're not debating the issue. They're not debating anywhere in the major media. Are all of these mental health that you're claiming we have at epidemic levels real? Does adult ADD and ADHD actually exist? Is there really a chemical imbalance to depression and bipolar? The answer is no. And if there was an honest debate between holistic psychiatrists and humanistic psychologists, they would be shown to be wanting in fact, scholarship, and science. Hence, there would be no science-based medicine, because that's an oxymoron today. It's pharmaceutical, profit-driven based medicine. So the debate can happen because the truth can't get out. So everything in the media is propagandized. And those who go along get rewarded. Those who don't are shunned and pushed aside. And that is the unfortunate part of where we're at today. That is as true in the media as it is true in any other sector of our lives. So we have to begin to take a look and pull off this grid and stop supporting the very people. You heard me at the beginning of the show say that I absolutely reject 99.1. Why? Because it means that those 99% no longer have to focus upon seeing their children eat garbage, knowing that it's creating diabetes and obesity, which will adversely affect their children. If, my God, if you're so selfish you don't care about your own child, think of the consequence of a child who will now die before you will. Is that what you're giving your child because of your own lack of spiritual connection and discipline? At what point can we see you pick up and who you choose to listen to, and whether or not you're able to stay neutral long enough to see where the truth is and then act upon it? No one forces you to go buy gifts this holiday season. It has nothing to do with the true spiritual meaning of Christmas. It is all propaganda, and we unfortunately have decided that somehow it's their fault, not ours. Whose fault is it where you put your money? Whose fault is it where you vacation? Whose fault is it the clothes that you buy? Are you forced to buy clothes made from Chinese slave labor or labor in India or any of the other, like Bangladesh, where they're making 14 cents an hour? Who forces you to do that? And if you say you didn't know, it's because you chose not to know. We can no longer hide behind that ubiquitous and disingenuous notion. I didn't know. Are you going to say you didn't know cigarette smoking was bad until you got emphysema and then cry that you should be given a settlement because you were a victim? Of what? The individual hubris, the collective denialism, the selfishness of society? Then where do we separate it? When you were supporting those warmongers, the hate machine, the neocons on both the left and the right through neoliberalism and perpetual war, where were you standing up and protesting in the streets that this is not the right way to approaching conflict? It was just like Vietnam all over, wasn't it? Except we didn't have all the front row seats to see each night the reporters before they were censored showing us the toll on civilians and Americans. This time it was a sanitized war. It was a clean war. It was out of sight, out of mind. Unless, of course, you were one of those people whose homes were broken into, your children raped and shot, all of which happened, 22 in one particular family, and no one held accountable. As long as it's someone else. Today I will be posting on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com a very interesting, insightful look. 16,000 homeless vets in Florida, in the woods. One day they had a stand down. A stand down is where volunteer vets come together for one day and provide some services, counseling, and help to those who are homeless. They'll give them haircuts and baths. They'll give them showers. They'll give them food. They'll give them some boots or a sleeping bag and a can opener, things that you and I take for granted they can't because they don't have. And they'll give them a chiropractic adjustment, and they'll be a doctor and a dentist to take a look to see what their condition is so they can try to get some additional medical help. There was a vet who I filmed that you will see who said that he went to a park, a veterans park, to read a book. He was there for a few moments. The police came up and gave him a ticket, told him he'd be arrested if he didn't leave. He said, why? They said, you're a vet? He said, yes. You're homeless? Yes. Then that's against the law. But what if I was a vet and not homeless? Then it's not against the law. But it's a veterans park. I'm a veteran. I've done nothing wrong. Yeah, you're homeless. That's a problem. Or what about the minister from the Methodist Church in the back of a truck who was watching me do this interview? I was the only journalist, by the way, allowed in because they had seen my previous work and saw that I was on behalf and working on behalf of the vets. And he came over. He says, "I've got a story for you." And I said, "What's that?" A church would go on Sunday to a park. It was a community park, a commons park, and they had a picnic area with a barbecue and picnic tables, and they would set up with church members volunteering, and the vets would come, and they would feed the vets, and after the vets finished eating, they would leave, and they would clean up, and it would be left spotless until the neighbors complained. Whose neighbors complaining? Regular people. You mean middle-class people? Yeah. Why would they complain? They didn't want these homeless people coming through their neighborhoods. But they were only coming because it was a meal, maybe the only hot meal that week. Didn't matter. They're no longer like us. So these were all at one time middle-class people. Now they're poor. So you, the 99%, you didn't want them coming to your neighborhood, so you put pressure on the mayor and the city council, and then the police were told, go and arrest. Arrest the church members. Arrest the ministers and the volunteers within the church for serving homeless people a meal in the park. Yes. Hard to believe? Impossible to believe that you'd be arresting church members for feeding hungry people a meal and cleaning up and leaving it in a community park? Yeah, it's happening. Did you know it was happening? Now you will if you want to see this. So understand, I'm coming from a different perspective. I'm seeing this issue differently. I don't see 1% doing it right and 1% greedy and causing all our problems. I see a communion that is dominant and submissive, and I see those who have the power to manipulate and use and those who refuse to acknowledge how they participated in giving their power to those who should not have it, the psychopaths, the sociopaths. Only when we see the truth of something can we change it. As long as we continue to live in the illusion, we cannot change what we're not willing to be honest about. I'm Gary Noll. Those are my thoughts. Now over to you. We will talk with you by giving us a call now on our number. Our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm talking on a telephone now because there was an active effort to sabotage this program today and to cut us off the air. Let me also mention that in the near future, WBAI and Pacifica will be selecting their programs to take you into the new year. Ours may not be in that selection process. If not, we certainly understand and we support BAI's decision. We will continue to wish them all the best, as well as Pacifica, as they deserve to exist, and we only hope that they can continue to do the important work they have. If, however, you turn on the dial one day, as has happened in the past, and you no longer hear my show, please just switch over to Progressive Radio Network. There you will always hear me, and we are growing massively. If you wonder what has happened to non-commercial radio and why it's shrunk and why it's no longer vital and why it's lost its relevance, you will understand the answer to yourself and then listen to Vital Growth Radio. Go to Google, you'll see 350 million hits. You heard me right, 350 million hits, and Progressive Radio Network is number one on that. Articles, videos, radio programs, information, groups, calls to action, all that is a part of it, not just downloading radio shows. There's not 350 million people listening on the radio. But there are people joining together to work together for a common good. The peace, sanctity, and rights, the basic underlying morality, we all should be respecting each other's life. That is what we represent, and that is not in the best interest of those who are living otherwise. That's why there's growth here. And we will continue, and no one can fire me from Progressive Radio Network or kick me off the air or sabotage, because I created this network, and it is growing phenomenally, faster than any other media source in the world. We are now going to take the rest of our time. I'm not doing our guest today. We'll have our guest back on another program to talk about zombie banks and why we should let all banks too big to fail under structured bankruptcy. Paul from Staten Island. Your turn.
Yeah, Gary, this is a message for the elite, the rich, the powerful, BAI board of directors. You're suffering from the illusion and the deception of materialism. You own nothing. When you pass from here, the only thing you're going to own is your soul and what you've done on this the short time of life you've gotten. And if you do the wrong thing, everything you have is going to be left behind. And they have to understand that. I think even the middle class, they have brainwashed us into thinking that what we own is what we are.
Paul, question for you. Paul, question. What do you think would happen if the 99% in the middle class who have as many as 20 to 30% of the homes foreclosed on their block decided this block will not be foreclosed on, we will help our neighbors, we will form protest marches, we will take our money out of the banks that are foreclosing, we will stand as human shields against the bank, against the marshals. What do you think would happen if that were done by the 44 million Americans who have been displaced up to this point? Where there, will they have made a difference or not if the middle class stopped acting like middle class, stopped thinking as if they were disempowered middle class, stopped thinking that they were limited by the material things they own, a $6,000 valued house now in Detroit, but thought as if they were as powerful in their resolve to protect one another, to honor one another, no matter what their race or background or ethnicity or age or sexual preference, they stood for decency. Do you think these homes would be foreclosed on today?
No.
No, they wouldn't. So let's stop thinking like middle class, lower class, rich class, unique class, Obama class. Let's start thinking as human beings joining together, arm in arm, strength to strength. Then see how they deal with us. Join together and say, you will not do this unless you go over my dead body. And then see how many of these people that are also your neighbor are willing to pull out a gun or stun you or beat you or shoot you. They also have children, they have wives, and at some point they must come to grips with the fact that they are part of a disease. They are one of the cancer cells. They should be there to protect your rights, not to violate them. Who are their masters? The banks or their church members? And when are the churches and the synagogues and the mosques going to march out of that church, out of that synagogue, and go down and say, we will no longer shop in this store ever again. We will no longer put our money in this bank ever again. And no student is to pay a single penny back. How many students do you think would then challenge that system, and what would happen to that corrupt system?
I've had it with these religious people. No.
I know a lot of religious people. I don't know a lot of spiritual people. I want to see spirituality and the ethics, morality that come from being spiritual, and look at the religious right and what they have done and their crusades and the segregation and the isolation, the pogroms. Who were the first people hit in 1296 in the first major crusade? It was the Jews who were destroyed on the way to the Holy Lands, all in the name of their God. Save me from your God. Give me the spiritual energy you have, and we can change. Religion is a doctrine. If it has spirituality, good for it. If it doesn't, then it's just nothing more than a bunch of creeds, rituals, and dogmas without purpose, without meaning, except to control its congregants. Let those congregants feed the poor in their neighborhood, protect their homes, take them in, shelter them, let them show that they care on a level that is meaningful to their scripture and not separate from it.
Can I say one last thing?
Yeah.
BAI, if we need Gary's voice, if he's taken off the air, I will dog you until, you'll never hear the end of me. Put it that way. Gary, we need your voice. And,
okay, but it is not my choice whether I stay on BAI. It is theirs, and it's not looking good. Thank you. Tim from Connecticut, your turn.
Hey, Gary. Hey, Gary, how you doing?
Good.
New listener, very impressed with what I've had to hear so far. I have an idea that, you know, hopefully can kill a few birds with one stone. Those birds happen to be maybe help the housing and financial mess that we're in these days. Why do I have to give my retirement income, my SEP account or my 401 account, to Wall Street? Why can't I take some of it or all of it, and use it to buy down the principal in the mortgage that I own that, you know, hopefully will free up my finances
because
a little bit.
Because the politicians were influenced by the banking committee and Senator Dodd and Barney Frank that you've seen on Liberal Radio. These are the people that created the laws to protect the bank, to protect the interest rate, to protect their users' interest, to protect the non-reestablishment of the Future Trading Commodities Act, to protect them from the Security and Exchange Commission, and to keep you from being able to do that. So you have to replace the politicians with real populist concerned citizens, and you have to take back these laws and change them so you can do exactly that. Thank you, Tim. Let's say Ed from Hawthorne, New Jersey. Ed, you're on.
Yes, there's an issue that we're not hearing anything about. We need to focus on that. This concerns the Bill of Rights, the Fourth Amendment, and the unreasonable seizure of property, which we have in the form of property taxes out of control. There is complete silence on this. It is an issue of homelessness. Our legislators in New Jersey absolutely ignore us after years and years of trying. We need a method of attacking this and winning. While I don't have an immediate solution,
I do.
I'm grateful to hear some airing of this and some dialogue.
You make a lot of important points on this, and I agree with you. The trouble is, in every community in America where the people have been in a bubble and the property taxes increased proportionate to the value of your house, they have grown the bureaucracies and the special interest groups of the bureaucracies, the private contractors who are part of the inside connection to these, and that's how it happens. So you've got to shut down the excesses, keep the necessary bureaucracies that we really need, and cut off the rest of the bureaucracies and pull down the property taxes. I don't believe that a person should be taxed on their labor nor on what they own. We should be living through different taxation, which is a flat income tax and sales taxes, so you're taxed on what you buy. That's legitimate. But we're not at a point yet where the average person understands these. I will deal with this in depth on an upcoming program. Thank you for bringing it to our attention. Richard from Rockland, we're going to try to go through about five calls real fast. Richard from Rockland, you're on.
Okay, Gary, nice to hear what you had to say about religions. As far as we are in a massive spiritual crisis, and religions have been an impediment to the correction of this mess. And I'm going to defer to everybody else and try to make this as quick as possible. This is going to sound like a shockwave. I'm not a spiritual moon believing in the rapture, but an event did happen within the United States, and that is the appearance of the two witnesses before the Great Tribulation. 20 huge volumes of the most astounding spiritual stuff is out there. Now,
but we're not advocating any religion. I believe in of respect that every religion has a right to exist, and adherents have a right to seek in that the truth they want. I'm asking the religion simply to become proactive in their communities, because how many people have gone to church on a Sunday and found that members of their congregation are no longer there because they're now homeless and had to move elsewhere? And I believe that the religious leaders have a moral responsibility to bring their congregation together to stop the wars,
Absolutely. To stop the
military-industrial complex. We got to run out. I only have a second for each call. Max from New York City, your turn.
Gary, thank you for taking my call. God bless you for what you do. I'd like to know what you think we can personally do, each one of us, for fighting Bill 1867, NDAA.
Support our rights, and support, on this particular case, we've got to support Ron Paul's effort, who in turn is allowing parents to be the determining factor, not the state, not the government, in mandating every child be mentally screened. Stay away from all teen screens. Stay away from your child being pathologized. Stay away from the drugging of our children. Stay away from Ritalin. Stay away from this, and you will do a great deal of service. But we need it codified, and that helps us with it. Max, thank you. And we are just about out of time. Anthony from New Jersey.
Gary, first, I believe in the earth. The earth is pretty much gave us life, and it can continue to give us life. Two, I believe that money plus the use of money can equal the elimination of money. And three, I believe in garden cities. developed in the 1800s. With our technology, Gary, there's no reason we shouldn't be able to have a garden city that is 100% self-sustainable, where you do not need money and people like mine can live together. And I'm talking a city, Gary, not an eco village. I'm talking about a garden city. We have the technology. I'd like to see some people put this together and eliminate the use of money. Bottom line, thank you.
I absolutely agree we should be having garden cities, but let's do it pragmatically. Let's start by taking those buildings that are not rehabitable and are nothing more than dangerous to their community and a blight to their community. Let us go in with community projects and level those and start gardens within communities where it is a commons garden, where people can learn skills of agriculture, hydroponics, greenhouses.
Relocate the building material, Gary. I know it can be done. You pop it on a truck, you relocate a building to a central location, and you can reuse that building. Absolutely, I agree with you.
Okay, well, there's a lot we can do. Thank you for bringing this up. I will do an in-depth show on this topic where we have a full hour in the near future.
Love it. Thank you, Gary. Have a good one.
Okay. We're out of time. I want to thank you all. I know that those in this audience care. At least most of you do. I know some of you would like to care but haven't gotten to the point where you're willing to self-actualize. I'm merely asking you today to look at what is possible. I'm going to be bringing some candidates on the air here you have not heard of. They've been excluded. Why? Because they're progressive. Because their ideals are inclusive. Because they're against war. They're against globalization. They're against the neocon prescription for the future. Therefore, the Democrats and Republicans, intentionally with malice aforethought, have not given them a forum. We will give them a forum. It is up for us then to value our vote, not to waste it on someone who will merely continue things as they have been in the past. We are faced with some major crisis coming at us.
Gary Null Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matthew Bogart. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Tabenfeld.